Happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to take a look at hybrids and plug-ins and natural gas-powered vehicles here on the Ideas Net now with John Dolan, hybrid expert at Smart Motors. It's a Toyota dealership in Madison. And Chris Schneider, president of Honda Motor Works of La Crosse. Both these guys have been with us a number of times. It's really pleased. Chris Schneider, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Larry.
And John Dolan, thank you so much for being with us as well.
It's always fun to be here.
Well, John, I'll just turn to you first. You guys at Toyota must be selling cars as fast as you can bring them in.
Right. For the first time since 2006, we're back to waiting lists on the Prius again. I remember back then, gas was over in the high $2 a gallon and flirting with around $3. At that time, a lot of Americans just would suck it up and keep driving. But now at $4 a gallon, we've seen a big customer shift to fuel efficiency, and it's affecting not just the hybrids, but all of our fuel-efficient cars. The Corolla and the Yaris, we're backordered on those as well.
Yeah, so it's been really busy for you. What about you, Chris?
Things have been very positive on fuel-efficient cars, as it should be.
Yeah, and I understand there's even a waiting list on used vehicles.
We have people who have given us deposits to try to help them find Honda Insights, and we've helped more people than any other dealership in the country to do that. We look forward to continuing that part of our business, but it's becoming very difficult, and we hope that if you've got listeners out there who are looking to market their Honda Insights, that they'll let us know about it.
Okay. People are holding on to them, though, and I know that one of the reasons Toyota is struggling, get back to you for just a minute, John, is it's the batteries that you're having trouble producing.
Right. There's still only one battery plant in Japan making the hybrid battery packs for our hybrids. That's owned by Matsushita, which is the Japanese company known here as Panasonic. And the EV, electric vehicle battery division, can't keep up. However, Toyota's taking some major steps to remedy that. They've got two plants in the works right now. They've told Panasonic to boost battery pack production to 850,000 units next year. Toyota's got a goal of selling 1 million hybrids by 2010, and so that's all part of that goal.
Chris, you displayed your Honda natural gas-powered vehicle at the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair recently, and it was fun to see you and be able to talk with you about it. And Honda has also introduced, what is it, FCX Clarity? It's a new zero-emission hydrogen fuel cell car.
Yes, it was a real pleasure to see you there at the MREA Energy Fair, Larry. It was a great event, and I think we should, as Wisconsin residents, be real proud that we have an event like that right here in our backyard.
Yeah.
I hope that although they have not announced the attendance numbers yet, as a board member, I'm very proud to think that we will have broken the 20,000-person barrier this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very happy to be able to give some additional exposure to the natural gas vehicle, because we think, Larry, that by increasing the infrastructure for natural gas-powered vehicles, it sets the base for hydrogen in the future, and that's what the Honda Clarity is running on, hydrogen. You can steam reform natural gas where you need to have refueling and produce hydrogen. So I know a lot of people are disappointed that the Clarity is available only in Southern California, where hydrogen refueling is available readily. And that's why we're looking at the solution by working on natural gas infrastructure refueling in the upper Midwest.
Yeah. So that could be another car of the future then for...
Absolutely. Now, the natural gas-powered Honda Civic has actually been produced for 10 years. And most people in the Midwest aren't aware of that because refueling has been a challenge. But there's lots of refueling in Wisconsin, including Madison. Mm-hmm. And we look forward to helping more people understand that there can be compressed natural gas, electric hybrids in the future, as well as plug-in, you know, gasoline-powered electric hybrid vehicles. So there's a lot of solutions that are available for people to become more energy efficient and environmentally sensitive.
Yeah. Where are we, John, you know, on, in terms of plug-in vehicles on a commercial basis?
Both Honda and Toyota are working in this area. Toyota expects to have them available for commercial leasing next year. They also, Toyota has, through Panasonic, started building a third battery factory for lithium-ion batteries.
Hmm.
And that is the best solution for the plug-in hybrid. Basically, with the lithium-ion battery, you take a battery that would in the Prius be the size of a suitcase and reduce it down to the size of a 12-pack with about three times the power. And so that's why the lithium ion is so ideal for a plug-in.
Yeah.
And Toyota, like Honda, is taking this blended approach that there are more than one solution to this problem of a transportation that we have right now. And plug-ins, hybrids, and hydrogen cars are all part of Toyota's future as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Paul and Belleville has a question for you, so let's go to Paul. Hi, Paul. Thank you for calling.
My question is, I have currently have a station wagon that I use for business, and that works out really well for me, but I'm looking to get better gas efficiency, and I was looking at the hybrids, and I currently didn't see anything that I saw that was a station wagon, so I was wondering if you had any type of suggestion for that, but also I travel rurally, probably 200 to 300 miles a day, and so I'm wondering about the difference between the hybrids as far as the efficiency of not braking all the time. It's all highway miles, and so I was wondering if I should just stay with it.
Yeah. Okay. You broke up a little bit there, Paul, at the end, but I'll turn to John first. John.
Yep. The first part of your question, looking for something a little larger than the Prius. Right now, Toyota has the hybrid Highlander SUV, midsize SUV, but Toyota has been teasing us for years now about a hybrid minivan, and we've started to get some indications that that might happen now in 2010. Toyota said they're going to come out with two new dedicated hybrids, one for the Lexus division and one for the Toyota division, and we are pretty sure that it's going to be the van this time in 2010.
Okay. Chris, comment from you?
Well, in the spring of 2009, Honda will be introducing a four-door hatchback that is yet unnamed. It's kind of frustrating to have a hybrid that will be coming out next that we don't have pictures of, although they're claiming that it's going to look something like the Honda Clarity hydrogen-powered fuel cell. The hybrid that we have beyond that is called the CRZ, and there's pictures and prototypes and information available. It will not be a solution for Paul, since it will not be a station wagon in any means.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my question to Paul would be, what is it that he's carrying on a regular basis, and is there a way for him to think about its packaging and the way that he is transporting it to fit into a hatchback or some other kinds of vehicles that might be more fuel efficient for him?
Yeah.
200 to 300 miles a day is a great deal of driving, and his savings could be very substantial.
Yeah.
A second part to Paul's question, I believe, was how efficient will it be if you do more highway travel than city, because the hybrids are known to excel in the city. And he mentioned, I think, that without as much regenerative braking, would they do as well on the highway? If we take the Prius, for example, I've got plenty of customers that email me all the time saying that they're getting 50 or more on the highway with that car. The key to that type of highway mileage, of course, is a little pedal management and not going over 65 miles an hour and maintaining that type of a pulse and glide mentality, and you can get that kind of mileage even without regenerative braking on the highway.
Yeah, and I have a friend with, and it seems like when people purchase a hybrid, they become a little more conscious of this. He drives the speed limit. He doesn't exceed the speed limit, and
right.
He gets tremendous gas mileage.
Yeah, most of the customers report that it was sort of a transformational moment in their lives. They got religion, so to speak, and realized, because there's so much feedback in the terms of information on our consumption screens, on our energy screens on these hybrids, that it's pretty easy to know what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong when you're driving them.
Yeah, for sure. Gary in Fitchburg has a question. Gary, hello.
Hi. We have several issues, and I think our energy problems are much, much greater than the general public realizes, although they're starting to wake up. Saudi Arabia doesn't have nearly the oil that they claim they have. But onto the plug-in possibility, there are several issues with that as well. Our energy grid is kind of stretched as it is, and if all of a sudden people start plugging in cars to the energy grid, good luck. The other thing is, if we're going to ramp up the energy grid, the infrastructure, a lot of our energy is produced via natural gas, and there you go. You start ramping up the use of natural gas, and then you have natural gas supply issues. So there is no, there's no magic fix to this. I guess we're going to have to pull everything together that we can.
Right.
My real concern is the fact that the government is beyond bankrupt. I mean, literally beyond bankrupt by trillions of dollars. And we need money for infrastructure if we're going to attempt to solve this issue with not only plug-in vehicles, but high-speed trains. We don't even have our first generation of high-speed trains in this country, while some of these European countries are on their fourth generation of high-speed trains. So, in short, I think we're in real, real trouble, and I don't see any politicians really speaking intelligently about solving this problem.
Well, thanks for calling. I'll turn to Chris first. Chris, a comment?
Wow, Gary had so many points there, and many of them very valuable points. I would like to, I guess, start by talking about the grid and, you know, the fact that much of the grid is being sourced through coal burning currently, and that we need to make changes there. But when it comes to plug-in hybrids or plug-in vehicles, like the full electric vehicle that I've been driving for the last year and a half, and it, Larry, is also a vehicle that is produced right here in Wisconsin. It's the Columbia Summit. I've been driving the new Columbia Mega now for the last week, and they're produced in Reedsburg, Wisconsin. The neat thing about plug-ins and plug-in hybrids is that they're going to encourage off-peak electrical usage. Most people work during the day. They could go home at night and plug in as they go to bed and use electricity off-peak, which isn't free, but it's a lot less because grid has to have the ability to maintain the facilities and the people and the training and the tools to meet peak. The really neat thing about plugging into the grid in the future is, you know, the car that I drive, I only use about one-tenth of its capabilities during a day normally. I could get out of my car and plug in at work and set a dial that says, I will sell back to the grid eight-tenths of my fuel, and I would still have enough to get home. So I could actually supply energy to the grid during its peak needs and then refuel after hours off-peak. So there are smart solutions to that challenge that Gary is bringing up. The second point that I'd like to touch on is the natural gas supply. And again, it's a concern. The good news is that our natural gas in this country is being produced domestically for the most part, as opposed to oil that's coming from outside of our country. But again, another celebration for Wisconsin, Larry and Gary and John, is that there's a farm in Baldwin, Wisconsin, that takes their cow manure, digests it to methane, scrubs the methane, making it pure enough to be pushed into the natural gas pipeline. So there is renewable natural gas, and it's happening right here in Wisconsin.
Hmm. John, good comments. John, comment from you.
Yeah, I mean, all those things that we're talking about here are both areas of concern and for optimism. Toyota, in fact, one of the things they're studying, and they have been through the University of California, Irvine, is how green are plug-in hybrids. And because of the fact that so much electrical comes from coal-powered plants. Is it really a viable solution for the mass of automobile drivers? And we kind of believe that it isn't. And that's why we're taking this blended approach to the whole thing. And to get back to Gary's question, another reason for optimism is the fact that we're beyond a grassroots movement now with people who are aware of the energy crunch and all these problems, and the fact that peak oil is a reality, and that the atmospheric problems are a reality, and that something needs to be done. I mean, if you read editorials from Paul Krugman in the New York Times, it's pretty clear that we need an effort that's equal to the moon program of the 60s to solve this problem right now.
Yeah, I would agree. We're talking about hybrids, plug-ins, natural gas-powered vehicles with our two guests, John Dolan, hybrid expert at Smart Motors, a Toyota dealership in Madison, and Chris Schneider, president of Honda Motor Works of La Crosse. If you'd like to join in, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Carmen Jackson, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll turn our attention back to the telephones here as we talk with John Dolan and Chris Schneider about hybrids and plug-ins and gas-powered vehicles. And Mike in Appleton, I believe, is up next. Mike, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Yeah, well, thank you for taking my call. I agree with the previous caller. I think our goose is cooked, so to speak. However, you know, I do think that there are solutions, as your guests are mentioning now. It will probably be a mix of things.
Yeah.
But one thing that kind of rings, you know, I don't know, rings a bell with me is, okay, I'm driving a car now that's, you know, it's got a normal gasoline engine. And, hey, you know, I'm just a regular guy. I can't afford to go out and buy a hybrid and, you know, get rid of the car that I have. Can somebody come up with a kit in which I could take this gas guzzling motor that I have out and plug something else in? That would seem to be a huge solution to the, you know, this huge fleet of cars that's already out there.
All right. Well, John, I'll turn to you first.
Unfortunately, there's no kit that will do that for you, but fortunately, Toyota and Honda both are working on making hybrids more affordable. That's the whole thrust of all their hybrid technology right now, is to make it smaller, lighter, more efficient, and above all, more affordable. And both Toyota and Honda have plans to come out in the not-too-distant future with affordable hybrids.
Yeah. Chris, comment?
Yes, Mike, in the spring of 2009, this new yet unnamed Honda, they are claiming that the upcharge for the hybrid components is $1,900. Now, that is for a new vehicle, and that might not be affordable. But hybrids have been out for almost 9 years now, and there are affordable pre-owned ones that are available. And we would certainly encourage you to take a look at hybridcarstore.com for some solutions that you might want to consider. Ultimately, I think, Mike, you have to look at it and say that it's not just about the initial price of the vehicle. That's a very large factor, and I don't mean to downplay that, but the cost of refueling and maintenance and repairs and insurance, it all can come down to a cost per mile. And when you start doing those cost per mile analysis, with the tremendous resale value that hybrids have, there really has not been a better solution in the last 9 years for you to spend as little as possible to get yourself from point A to point B than to consider investing in a hybrid. And we would encourage you to do that on a basis that would be affordable under your circumstances.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Mike. Appreciate it. And Jake in Menasha, your turn. Hi, Jake.
Hi. I was at a family gathering over the weekend for the 4th, and two of my brothers and I got into a discussion about hybrid vehicles. And I said, well, GM had a head start on hybrid vehicles like maybe a dozen or 20 years ago, and they dropped the program. And I said, what happened there? And my two brothers both said simultaneously, well, nobody wanted those cars. So I said, well, I saw this movie, Who Killed the Electric Car, and it's not about that. It was about something else. So can you comment on the whodunit?
Well, GM certainly has said that they couldn't sell them. I don't know. Chris Schneider, a comment from you first. Now we'll turn to John.
Wow. you know, Jake, the movie Who Killed the Electric Car, there were a lot of fingers that were pointed. politicians and governments and the manufacturers and regulatory agencies in California, but they also did point their finger at the public. And, you know, having lost the Honda Insight 2 years ago, the EPA's highest-rated fuel efficiency vehicle in history, it's sad for me to say that part of it is definitely the consumer, and they've had an impact. 30 years ago, we saw a cycle where people were very interested in EPA ratings and getting good mileage, and we lost it. The good news, bad news is that since we now recognize that America is in the world economy, and as China and India are coming on board, we'll no longer have the opportunity to go through that cycle again. And so energy prices are going to remain at the top, which will help consumers focus on energy efficiency. The bad news, of course, means that our energy costs are going to remain quite high, although significantly less than what most of Europe and Asia are paying. So who killed the electric car is pointing a lot of fingers, and there's a lot of fingers to be pointed. We just hope that you, as a listener of Wisconsin Public Radio, showing your good decision in the great programming that they have available, will think about voting with your pocketbook the next time it's your turn to make a decision about the future of transportation, and send that signal to the governments and to the other manufacturers that this is a movement that's important for us to remain focused on for the long term.
Yeah. And John, comment?
Yes, I was really fortunate to sit on a panel discussion with Chelsea Sexton at UW-Whitewater this past spring, and she was one of the principals in Who Killed the Electric Car, the movie, and she showed the movie, and we had a panel discussion about that, and she elaborated her list of suspects, and they all pretty much included government, the auto industry itself, the consumer, batteries, and it was a blend of everything. It was a combination of all of these factors. Pretty much there were a really hardcore group of EV enthusiasts that were probably larger than anybody really thought. And you can see right now with all these plug-in efforts in California, especially through CalCars and Felix Kramer and all those folks out there, that this is something that clearly is more than just a fad and a movement like that.
Yeah, it's not a passing fancy.
Mm-mm.
Thanks again, Jake, for calling. Larry in Menominee will turn to you next. Larry, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm a farmer in a rural area in Wisconsin, and I purchased an interesting vehicle this spring. It's a pickup truck with four-wheel drive, of all things. You know what it gets for mileage?
No idea.
It's 45 plus.
45 plus?
Yeah.
And what kind of vehicle is it?
It's called a Kia from Japan. It's right-hand drive, and it has a three-cylinder gasoline engine in it. And it sips gas. And I'm wondering why we cannot, as the in our infinite wisdom, build a vehicle like that. In Japan, they're very common. They make them as vans, as cars, and as pickup trucks. This 45 miles a gallon pickup truck that I have is a four-wheel drive. It has a dump. It has limited slip differential and 45 miles per gallon.
And it's a right-hand drive.
It's illegal to drive on the road, incidentally.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
and why would you suppose that is?
Well, it's a right-hand drive, probably.
Oh, you mean like the right-hand drive the postman drives is okay to drive?
Well, I can tell you what. I'm not the expert here, so I'm going to turn to a couple people who may have some comments on it. Chris, I'll start with you.
Well, I guess if we want to start by talking about efficiency, you know, I'm driving on the highway a compressed natural gas vehicle that when I'm refueling for $1.14.9 and getting 38 miles per gallon, that's the equivalent of 130 miles per gallon. So in that spectrum, 45 doesn't sound so good. When I drive 50 miles in my neighborhood electric vehicle and refuel for a dollar, then I'm getting 200 miles per gallon equivalent. So there are technologies that exist out there. The reason that we don't have them here is because at $4 a gallon versus $11.80 in Germany, the pressures are much more significant on those marketplaces. And probably the reason that your vehicle is not legal on streets, Larry, is that it has not been crash tested by the National Highway and Traffic Safety Administration. If it does have airbags, someone should consider doing just that and getting that vehicle approved to be on U.S. highways and increase efficiency of four-wheel drive pickups, because obviously 45 miles per gallon is awesome.
Yeah, it's very good. John, comment?
It shouldn't be a surprise to us that they've actually had fuel-efficient cars even in America for a long time. Back in 1930s, O.D. Smart, one of the original founders of Smart Motors, did a mileage test on a Willys Overland. He put 1 gallon of gas in the Willys, and he drove it from the Smart Motors dealership to Mount Horeb and back, and he found that that Willys Overland got 33.4 miles per gallon, and this was in the 30s. So there have always been fuel-efficient cars, and they are even better, far better now. It's just been the need to adapt to them. And now the need is felt more than ever.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Larry, thanks again. Mary in Minocqua, I believe, is up next. Let's go to Mary. Hi.
Hi. Great show. I appreciate these gentlemen, the expertise. I have a Honda Civic. I get between 40 and 50 miles to the gallon, so it's a great car. I have 150,000 miles on it. I definitely want a hybrid, the next car. But my question, I've been kind of thinking about this, is, my timing, like I know I could drive my Civic until 200,000, but my timing, and when should I get a new hybrid? What kind? And it seems like they're developing new kinds all the time, and some aren't even out yet. What is your suggestion for as far as shooting for what time to get the best hybrid for me?
Yeah, I get this question a lot when we do computer shows.
Oh, okay. Right.
People are often, when should I buy a computer? Well, this is a good question too, Mary. And John, I'll turn to you first.
Well, as you can tell by all of our talk here today, we do a lot of talk about what's around the corner, and people are looking for solutions right now. They're not waiting for something else to be delivered later. They want solutions right now. So a fellow at hybridcars.com, his name is Bradley Berman, he always suggests buy now, and it's pretty much the same what computer advocates always said. Don't wait for the next great thing. If you have the need now, buy now.
Yeah, yeah. Chris?
Well, Mary, you know, thank you for investing in a Honda and considering a hybrid, and that's a very good decision-making process. The problem is that as a person who wants to encourage a good decision, we really need to have more information about how and when and where and those kinds of things for us to help you make really a good decision. I think that it's hard to be able to say that doing it now would be wrong. It would certainly increase your efficiency and lower your cost per mile to own and operate, and that's always a positive thing. But a lot of people who own their cars, you know, they love them, and it's taken good care of them, and they want to drive it further, and we understand that part of it, too. The good news, Mary, is that you could have a love affair with a hybrid.
But what about, should I wait until they develop these new ones that are bigger, not bigger, but better than the ones they have now, or not wait?
You know, each generation of hybrid that comes out has improvements, mm-hmm. and each one is generally more fuel efficient, but you could look at the fact that the Honda Insight was the first in the country and the highest EPA rating, and it's gone now, and say, wow, I don't want to see that happen. So by purchasing now, you are also, again, sending that signal to the manufacturers, and not so much Honda and Toyota, but you know, General Motors, saying that the public wasn't looking to invest. And you do send a good signal by doing that. There is still currently tax credits available on Honda hybrids. So now is a pretty good time. Finding one for immediate delivery would be the biggest challenge. So I would suggest that you consider making contact soon and have someone help you try to make that better decision about the timing.
Okay.
Yeah. In the past, there's been a so-called hybrid hardware technology penalty, where a hybrid say, a Prius would cost $2,000 to $2,300 more than, say, a comparable Corolla. We always like to point out that there's a lot more equipment and features on the Prius. It's a lot more car than a Corolla. There's no real apples-to-apples comparison there. But when gas gets to be $4 a gallon, it actually becomes kind of a no-brainer. Because if you run the numbers, let's say you have a car that's getting passably good and maybe in, according to past standards, it was exceptional mileage, 22, 24 miles per gallon, and you buy a Prius and that car for you and your hands is only going to get 44 miles per gallon, not like the hypermilers who do 50 and higher. If you look at gas at $4 a gallon and you drive the average 12,000 miles a year, that extra so-called hardware cost will pay for itself, and the calculation is 1 year and 8 months. So it does become, at $4 a gallon, more of a no-brainer than it did it earlier.
Mary, is your Civic a VX?
EX.
An EX?
Yep, it's actually a 97.
And you're doing 40 miles per gallon.
40 to 50, yep.
Good for you. You've got great technique there. You'd be really a hybrid star.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mary.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck. Thomas in Manitowoc, your turn next. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, I'm looking at purchasing a Honda Fit, and I'm the kind of person who keeps a vehicle for a long, long time. The only thing I'm wondering when I hear all of your new technologies being explored is how long will a gas vehicle like that be viable? I'm wondering if I hang on to it for 8 years, will it be outdated by then?
Is your question, if you hang on to a Honda Fit for 8 years, will it be outdated by then?
Yes.
Well, Honda has announced that the Fit will become a hybrid. They haven't announced that it will be coming to America yet. My guess is if gasoline continues to rise as it has historically, that the Honda Fit will become a hybrid, and then it could be considered outdated. But if you're getting really good gas mileage and it's serving you well and it's still worth a great deal of money, it's cost you little to own and operate, then you've made a good decision, and you've got more equity to trade on the hybrid when it becomes available. So the Honda Fit, again, like John was talking about with the Corollas and the Yaris's and the Priuses, there's a waiting list for that vehicle. There was a really neat article recently talking about price per mile per gallon, and the Honda Fit was the winner of that on the basis of the miles per gallon that you get per dollar. And so it's a great car and a good decision. Don't feel bad about newer technology coming out. That's something that all of us should be looking forward to and saying we're making progress. You know, if it was the other way around, then we'd have a much larger complaint, I think.
Yeah.
And if you go back to some of the comments that an earlier caller, Gary, brought up, I think doing it now makes sense from an environmental standpoint as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thomas, thank you for calling. Jackie in Burlington, your turn. Hi, Jackie.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I actually am working in Burlington, but I live in Chicago. And my question is about the whole plug-in technology, and if that were to become more popular, how would you handle someone like me who relies on street parking? Where would I plug in?
You mean at home?
Yeah. I don't have a garage. You know, I live in an apartment. And
okay. All right. Gotcha.
Like in this, you know, in the grand scheme of things, what are the ideas around, you know, making it available to people like me?
Okay. Chris, you want to start?
In Europe, there are places where they just put these posts on the streets. They're kind of like parking meters almost that you can plug into. And we think that as that movement grows, we'll see more and more of that. You know, Larry, I got a chance to talk about the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair, and as we're coming up on the end, I'd like to also indicate another Wisconsin happening, and that's Northwest Wisconsin Sustainable Energy Fair that's happening this weekend on the 12th in Ladysmith, the Rusk County Fairgrounds. Bioenergyforum.com. is where people can get more information. There may be some people there that can answer that question better for you, Jackie,
okay,
than I can. But, John, you were talking about, you know, Felix Kramer and the CalCars mm-hmm. people. I mean, what's their vision for the plug-in and where people who don't have a garage?
Sure, Chris. If you go back to, we alluded to Who Killed the Electric Car earlier, if you recall during that whole project, there were charging stations up and down the California coast, public ones. And if you look at what's going on right now in California, there are companies like Google and forward-thinking people like that are including charging stations in their future plans for people that want to go for plug-in. So you don't necessarily have to do it at home, but although there will be some charging stations available in the future when this idea really gains a hold.
Jackie,
mm-hmm.
if you'd stop commuting to Chicago and come to La Crosse, you could refuel right here at Honda Motor Works. We will let you charge up for free at this point.
Well, I have a 96 Honda Civic hatchback, and it's nowhere near dying. So
good for you.
All right. John, don't you hate that when people are waiting for their Hondas and Toyotas to die?
Well, if they want to get a hybrid or a more environmentally conscious car, they can always give that car to a son or a daughter or a family member, too.
There you go.
Hand them down.
Well, I tell you what, this has been a great conversation. Maybe we got time for one more call. Pete in Black River Falls, hello.
Hi. That guy about the right-hand drive being illegal,
yeah.
It's not illegal to drive a right-hand drive vehicle. It's illegal to drive the wrong way on the right-hand side of the road. But because I own a Subaru Legacy, and my wife does rural carrier.
Yeah.
And it's not illegal to drive a right-hand vehicle.
As long as it's met the safety standards, mm-hmm. isn't that it, John?
Yeah, and that was always the problem when people would buy like a rare car in Europe and bring it over to the U.S. The EPA pretty much quashed all that with all their standards for bringing in so-called gray market cars from outside of the country. They had to pass their certification.
Hey, Pete, in Black River Falls, have you seen their plug-in Columbia car that they use for the city?
No, I haven't. See, I'm not from here. I'm from by Winona.
Oh, okay.
Well, Winona State, St. Mary's University has them also, but in Black River Falls, since the falls is what's powering their electricity in the area, they're actually running the vehicle with water power.
Ah, all right. Perfect way to end. And I tell you what, there's obviously so much interest. Chris and John, I hope you'll decide to come back and be with us again.
Anytime.
Love to.
All right. Thank you both very much. Chris Schneider is president of Honda Motor Works of La Crosse, and John Dolan, a hybrid expert at Smart Motors, a Toyota dealership in Madison. Really happy to have both of them with us today, and we'll get them back, and we'll talk some more about hybrids and plug-ins and natural gas-powered vehicles. But coming up, we're going to take a look at an engineering marvel. It's known as ALMA, with Ed Churchill, professor of astronomy in the UW-Madison Department of Astronomy. He's closely connected with the Atacama Large Millimeter Array, called ALMA. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.